I'm Duarte Geraldino, Deputy Managing Business Editor for Al Jazeera Digital. You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm in for Tenzina Vega, who's on maternity leave right now. We start with COVID-19 and the domino effect it's having in the U.S. and around the globe. It's a surreal scene around the world. Restaurants, stores, and borders are being shuttered. The European Union is restricting non-essential travel for a month. And while you are likely starting to get used to self-isolation, people in three states were standing in long lines, sometimes for hours at a time, very close to each other, waiting to vote. This despite the Trump administration's warnings that gatherings of 10 or more people are dangerous and should be avoided. Florida, Illinois, and Arizona primary voters gave a big win to Joe Biden. Now, there are thousands of confirmed coronavirus cases in the U.S. right now, and those are just the ones we know about. And yet, Puerto Rico is recording only a small number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 so far, and no deaths? This is despite hundreds of calls to medical centers. Obviously, those numbers will grow. Now, the island's governor, Wanda Vasquez, issued guidelines that are more strict than anywhere on the U.S. mainland, a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. Most businesses are closed for the next 2 weeks, and if you are on the island, you can only leave your house for food, medicine, or to go to the bank. If you break those rules on the island, you could get a hefty fine or even be arrested. Now, we've covered Puerto Rico's financial and political turmoil very carefully over the last couple of years, including the aftermath of devastating natural disasters there. These are all now factors in the Puerto Rican response to COVID-19. Danica Cotto is with us now. She's a correspondent for the Associated Press who covers the Caribbean. She's been in Puerto Rico covering the coronavirus response there. Danica, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Also with us is Arelis Hernandez, who is a correspondent for the Washington Post. She has also extensively reported on Puerto Rico. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
So, Danica, what does it look like in Puerto Rico in the age of this virus?
Well, the streets are pretty bare. It's a bit eerie. You don't really see that much traffic, especially at night. And most people are heeding the warnings and following the executive order. Just the other day, someone tried to sit down in an empty plaza to have their breakfast, and private guards threw them away. Police have gone into the beaches and have cleared tourists and residents from the beaches. So everyone's pretty much staying at home and biding their time for at least 2 weeks until, you know, any new orders might be given.
Arelis, why is it important for Puerto Rico in particular to have such a drastic response?
Well, I think the governor has received some criticism about how quickly they've responded to the situation, first of all. And secondly, Puerto Rico has a really high percentage of the population that's elderly and have pre-existing conditions and chronic diseases. Added that to the fact that the healthcare system has been near collapse for some time, Puerto Rico is in a particularly precarious position.
I understand. I've heard some stats about 1 in 5 Puerto Ricans on the island is over 65 years old. Is that 20%? Is that correct?
As far as I know, that I think it might be even a little bit higher than that. But, you know, you add on to that the number of people who are, you know, disabled or who depend on things like dialysis. I think the rate of the pervasiveness of diabetes on the island is like 50% higher, I think, in Puerto Rico than in the mainland. So, yes, there's a, you know, substantial elderly population, but there's also a bunch of sick people in Puerto Rico.
Danica, how are these measures, like the curfew in particular, being enforced on the ground?
Well, these officers are working 12-hour shifts right now. So they're patrolling the streets, especially from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m., they recently announced that they would no longer be warning people and businesses who are found outside during those hours. So previously, they cited more than 170 people and businesses said, you know, you're not supposed to be open, you're not supposed to be outside. And now they will only receive a citation to appear in court. And they could also receive fines up to $5,000. The governor has warned that if people keep disrespecting the executive order, that she will implement harsher measures, including pulling liquor licenses and other permits.
$5,000 is a lot of money for everybody, but on the island, given the fact that earnings are so low, that's a particularly heavy burden, no?
It is a very steep fine. Puerto Rico's reaching almost a 14-year recession. It's still trying to juggle its $70 billion public debt load, which part of it has been restructured. But this is definitely a heavy, heavy blow for people who have not been able to work spending 2 weeks inside at home. Some people have been worried about an increase in their power and their water bills as a result of this curfew as well.
Adelise, what about testing? It's been an issue for many places around the world. What's the situation in Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico, I believe this week, says that they have some ability to test locally through their, I think, biohazards team. But I believe that's limited in the way that it's limited in other communities across the country. And early on, again, with the criticism that's been levying against the governor and responding to this, they did not have any local capacity to test and to see, you know, whether they have to send that out. You know, they'll take specimens with some of the first cases with that Italian tourist who came off the passenger cruise ship. You know, they have to send those out to Atlanta and CDC. And, you know, that takes a while in the U.S. mainland. Imagine how much longer it takes for Puerto Rico being in an island several thousand miles away.
So every test that needs to be done has to be the samples collected on the island, then it's flown back to the mainland. During that time, that person could infect other people. Is that the risk?
Yes, absolutely the risk. And an acute risk in Puerto Rico is that you have a lot of the folks who are working, healthcare workers, nurses, things like that, that work in the hospitals that are dealing with some of these cases, also happen to work part-time jobs in nursing homes across the island. It's, you know, a practice that's existed for a really long time. And so you have these folks who are, you know, doing their shifts in the hospitals, you might be working overtime, being exposed to some of these patients, and then going into senior homes where, you know, they could be further exposing and spreading this. I don't know what measures the government so far has taken, maybe Danica, in terms of sort of stemming that.
Puerto Rico's government did get permission this week to start testing people. So thankfully, they no longer have to send the test over to the U.S. mainland, which does cut down on that time. However, yesterday, the government was severely criticized following a press conference in which officials said that very strict criteria would apply to determine whether someone would get tested. And one of those criteria would be whether the person has traveled. So, of course, many people said, well, what about, you know, local transmission? What about people who are not showing symptoms? And so early this morning, the government announced to the tears of many people that doctors are now allowed to independently test people for COVID-19. They no longer need to go to the health department to request permission. And part of the problem was that the health department was denying these requests if someone had specifically not traveled outside of Puerto Rico. In addition, the governor announced today that it already asked the FAA to shut down the main international airport and other airports across the island. So basically, she wants a permanent, temporary stop to all domestic and international flights to and from Puerto Rico for 2 weeks. If that is not granted, she has also asked that flights be limited to the airports where screenings are being held. And at this point, the only airport doing that is the main international airport in San Juan, where about 280 National Guard members are screening all passengers coming from anywhere, the U.S. mainland and other countries. And they hope to start that at four other airports by the end of the week, including another international airport in the town of Aguadilla.
Puerto Rico faced severe earthquakes just a few short months ago. How will that impact the spread of the coronavirus?
I think intensely, right? I haven't checked the latest number, but I think there are still hundreds of people that are living in sort of itinerant conditions and camps, either, you know, just outside their homes or in sort of these government set up camps in which they're eking out a living through that. And the hygiene conditions in those places, though it's gotten better since the early days of the earthquakes, is still a problem for a lot of folks. Again, you know, staying clean while you're living outdoors or you're trying to keep germs at bay or something as deadly as this virus is going to be a challenge for those folks.
We know that Puerto Rico has had a lot of political and financial turmoil in just its recent history. What about funding for disaster recovery? Is that going to be a problem?
I think I don't remember exactly the number, but they've already dipped into their emergency funding this year, if that's right, Danica. And so they've asked for more money for this particular emergency. Keep in mind that Puerto Rico finances. Their entire budget is overseen by an oversight board that came through PROMESA legislation back in 15 or 16. And so Puerto Rico doesn't independently or isn't supposed to independently make decisions about their finances without the approval of this unelected board. They've dipped into this fund, this emergency fund that was set aside budget-wise already with the earthquakes and other things that have happened. This is just going to place an additional burden on, you know, that particular fund and be interesting to see what kind of flexibility the oversight board gives to the government of Puerto Rico to be able to respond to this. But, you know, the economic ramifications of, you know, shutting down Puerto Rico, an island that largely or a huge part of the economy depends on tourism, is going to be insignificant. I don't think we even know the ways that, you know, this could hurt Puerto Rico's economy in the future.
Dominica, did you want to add?
Sure. Actually, the board, which oversees the island's finances, so basically that means that Puerto Rico needs to get permission from the board to use any money for certain purposes, including, you know, this type of situation. So the board agreed a couple of days ago to free up $160 million to address the situation. However, the government does say it needs more. And in addition, it's requested if it could delay the revision of a fiscal plan, which implements, you know, several austerity measures.
So, you know, one of the things that a lot of people are wondering right now is that Puerto Rico has often been criticized for not acting quickly enough in the past in response to disasters like this. At least, is this time different? Are they facing as much criticism?
So I've been talking to some folks who work in emergency response and in the health, health field. And I think there's still significant amount of criticism that she should have shut down the island to cruise ship passengers a little earlier, and that they waited too long for their first case to begin to take preventative measures on the island, considering how vulnerable its population is to something like this, an epidemic like this. When sort of news of that first case of that Italian tourist coming, you know, onto the island, and there was a bit of criticism that I heard here, and I'm based in Texas, from folks who are wondering, you know, what kind of measures did the government take to secure that ambulance, to make sure that this person was placed in isolation, and criticism specifically of the Secretary of Health, who had since resigned, and sort of downplaying it seemed as though dismissive of the fact that this was something that could spread within the community. And that's where the criticism has come. However, I think some of that has been tempered by the correction that's been made and this sort of decisive action that the governor has taken. Now, that being said, you know, if you're a business owner and you're having to shut down your bar for 2 weeks or not able to sort of make the money that you typically expect within that time frame, you probably have a gripe as well.
Dominica Goto is a correspondent for the AP covering the Caribbean, and Arelis Hernandez is a correspondent for the Washington Post. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And remember, all of our coverage on Puerto Rico is at thetakeaway.org/Puerto Rico.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.